There's got to be an explanation to all these UFO sightings, right? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
This is a WTOP original podcast.
Coming up in this episode of Target USA.
President Biden's visit to Ukraine. Even though they're at war with Russia, Ukrainians are on top of the world.
This surprise visit, it means really a lot because it's not just a visit. It's the first visit of the President of the United States of America to Ukraine in the last 15 years, and it couldn't have come at a more appropriate time.
Yuri Sack, an advisor to Ukraine's Minister of Defense, said this was about more than symbolism.
And it was very important to demonstrate, you know, first of all, to our enemy that the plan, the hope of the Russians that Ukraine will be left alone in this war, the hope of the Russians that the West will not be committed did not come through.
A look at the war in Ukraine 1 year later.
Coming up on this episode of Target USA,
the National Security Podcast.
From WTOP in Washington, D.C., this is Target USA. Russia
could render huge harm to this country.
North Korea's secret missile
capable of reaching the whole of the United States.
Dangerous terrorist.
D.C. is repeatedly mentioned as someplace they would like to seek an attack.
Cyber criminals.
Decryption successful.
America has a target on its back. And on this program, we investigate the threats, the people behind them, the agencies fighting them, and the impact on you. This is Target USA,
the National Security Podcast.
I'm J.J. Green. Our podcast has several sections tonight. One is a conversation we had with Yuri Sack, an advisor to Ukraine's Minister of Defense, on February 20th. This was the day that President Biden made a surprise visit to Ukraine. Then we spoke to him yesterday, which was the 28th of February. As he was in Washington, he was talking with us about the second year of this war. First, we go to the conversation from February 20th. Yuri, the first question I'd like to ask you today, President Biden visited Kyiv today. How important was that?
That was very important, JJ. This surprise visit, which, you know, deep inside, a lot of us were hoping that it would happen. We've had media inquiries now for a month, like since pretty much the day when President Biden's visit to Poland, to Europe overall, was announced. Everybody was trying to sort of guess, you know, will he or will he not? And there were like whole theories developed, you know, that it's unsafe. And in the US, we were told that, you know, the President of the United States of America under Constitution cannot stay, for example, on a train for, you know, that many hours on end. So there were so many things happening and so many, curiosity. And look, it did happen. And it means really a lot because it's not just a visit. It's the first visit of the President of the United States of America to Ukraine in the last 15 years. And it couldn't have come at a more appropriate time. Because, as you know, 4 days from today, we will be marking 1 year since the beginning of the large-scale invasion. And it was very important to demonstrate, you know, first of all, to our enemy that the plan, the hope of the Russians that Ukraine will be left alone in this war, the hope of the Russians that the West will not be committed, did not come through. And this visit today is a confirmation of, you know, the United States' unwavering support for Ukraine, and we are very grateful for that.
Yuri, aside from the symbolism of this visit, what was accomplished today?
Of course, there were talks, the open talks, the ones that take place behind the closed doors. We understand that, you know, a new military assistance package was announced, which will be very, very important now that we are preparing for our counteroffensive. Now, second of all, it is our understanding that the presidents have discussed the prospects of supplying to Ukraine long-range missiles, which are, again, are something that we have been requesting for a long time now. And when we get them, they will be a game changer in the same way that HIMARS systems have been. So, you know, overall, when President Zelensky was summing up the result of today's visit, he said that the results of today's visit will be visible on the battlefield. And that's the most important thing.
Speaking of the battlefield, there were some early reports that there were air raid sirens that sounded, I guess, while President Biden was there. What came of those sirens? Were there any Russian attacks today, to your knowledge, at least on Kyiv? I know I'm pretty sure they're continuing the battle down in the south and the east, but were there any attacks around Kyiv today?
Well, no. We didn't detect any missiles, you know, over or near Kyiv. But, you know, the way this air defense system works, every time strategic bombers take off, for example, in Belarus, our air defense forces must warn the Ukrainians, you know, because by now we understand that if they're taking off in Belarus, that means that Kyiv is a potential target. And we live in an atmosphere where it is not possible to ignore these possible threats. And our Air Force, as well as our general staff, warns Ukrainians on a daily basis that the risk of another missile strike is always very high. Plus, we understand that the 1 year since the beginning of the large-scale invasion is soon, and it is very possible that Russians will try to attack Ukraine to sort of mark the anniversary. So yeah, there were no attacks today over Kyiv, but the risk remains high.
What has Ukraine achieved, generally speaking, in this 1 year? And I know there are a lot of things, so I don't want to ask you to kind of try to lay them all out, but just from a 30,000 foot level, what has Ukraine achieved in this 1 year?
We became stronger and we made our enemy weaker. That's how I put it.
Well, that is a very, very good way to put it, because that's pretty much what you did. You exposed what many people thought was a massive behemoth of a military to be far from it. And Ukraine has continued to push forward through some very difficult situations all across the country. War crimes investigations are underway, and, you know, there's rebuilding going on and a lot of things. So the second year of this part of the conflict, what does Ukraine hope to achieve in this second year?
Victory. We hope that this year will become the year of our victory, and we hope that this will be, on this February 24th, that this will be the only ever anniversary of this unprovoked aggression against our country. And we are confident that this is possible. We hope our allies share this confidence with us. And we hope that our allies understand that victory is possible this year in case everything falls into place in terms of the provision of military support. And one other thing that I would like to say with regards to Mr. Biden's visit today to Kyiv is what he has shown to the world, that a bully must not be feared. Because this is essentially what Russia wants to achieve. Russia wants you to be afraid. Russia wants me to be afraid. Russia wants every president of every European country to be afraid. And Russia wants the president of the United States to be afraid. And President Biden today has sent a very strong message that a bully will not be feared. A bully will be defeated.
As you look at the next steps for Ukraine in trying to affect that defeat, we know that fighter jets are still something that Ukraine is still working on getting. Has there been any progress to speak of in terms of your request and in terms of the responses from the allies?
Look, the main thing is that this discussion has already begun. And we are fully aware of the fact that it's not just about getting an actual aircraft. You know, when we talk about getting fighter jets, it's not just the aircraft. It's the capability. So everything that comes with the aircraft, the logistics, the maintenance, the support, right? So for every one F-16 pilot, there needs to be a crew of 25 to 30 people, like engineers on the ground, which make it possible for that pilot to fly that fighter jet, that F-16. So we are aware of the fact that this is not doable overnight, but we hope that, you know, things will begin to develop faster now. We hope that our pilots will begin training programs fast in different countries, including in the U.S. And we hope that, you know, soon, in a couple of months' time, Ukrainian pilots will be able to get their hands on the fourth generation fighter jets, and this will only be good for our joint victory.
Okay, you have been very busy, traveling back and forth and in this place and that place, working the communications end of this, and I know that there's lots more of that for you coming, but is there any personal reflection you'd like to share with us that's taken place during the course of this year that you remember that stands out to you personally?
What stands out to me is, I think that, you know, tragic as this war has been for my country and for my people, it has made a lot of people worldwide better, more caring. It brought us closer. We've become a proper union of international states. You know, we've become, in a way, a family. And I hope I don't sound too, you know, idealistic, but at the same time, this feeling of belonging to the community of like-minded people who share the same values, this in itself is a very powerful weapon, and our enemy knows this. So because we are bound by our shared values, we are destined to win this war, and we are destined to live in a future that will be peaceful, stable, and prosperous.
Now, to our second conversation with Yuri Sack on February 28th. So what about the spring offensive we've heard about? Has it started already?
Well, you know, it's probably best to describe it as a crawl. I mean, if you're referring to the Russian offensive, so it's a crawling offensive which has not had any success. And the reason why it was unsuccessful perhaps is because during the last 12 months, we have degraded the Russian army to such an extent that, you know, they just don't have the capability to mount a large-scale offensive. So, of course, they're still desperate to achieve at least something. This is why they are concentrating all their forces, for example, on Bakhmut, because they're hoping to gain full control of at least Donetsk region. But, you know, we are aware of their plans, and we will continue to do what we have to do.
So, speaking of what you have to do, what about your offensive? We've heard something similar coming from the Ministry of Defense. I know you're not going to talk about specifics, et cetera, but what's the situation as far as your plans?
Yeah, well, you know, we're actually quite open about this. We've said it many times that we are preparing for our counteroffensive because, you know, we are not interested in letting this war drag out for too long. This is why we are now building up our capability. We are talking to our partners with the view to receiving things such as longer-range missiles like ATACMS. The tanks are already arriving in Ukraine, you know, the ones that are provided to us by the Tank Coalition. So as soon as we build up sufficient amount of military resources that we need, we'll go for it.
Okay. So 2 years. This is the second year of this war. It started. Give me your thoughts about what this meant, this milestone, what it meant.
Well, one thing I would like to stress is that we all hope in Ukraine, and I think that people in the Western countries as well, we hope that this was the first and last grim anniversary of this war, because during the last 12 months, we have all lived in a very, very unstable, fragile world, a world which is, every day threatened by nuclear blackmail, by refugees, exodus, and stuff like that. So I don't think it's in anybody's interest to celebrate a year from now another grim anniversary. And this is why it's important for everybody to step up our efforts. You know, we are on our side doing all we can. And our allies, I think they are aware of the situation on the ground, and they know what we need. And nobody wants this war to become a frozen war. So let's just, you know, step up our efforts and keep going.
So speaking of what you need, you've been talking recently about fighter jets, tanks, etc. What is the thing you need most?
It's very difficult to prioritize and say that we need some things more than we need others because, you know, on the one hand, we're still target of the drone attacks, and there was one just 2 days ago, and you know that out of 14 drones, we've been able to shoot down 11, but that means that three still found their targets and caused destruction. So air defenses continue to be a priority. Having sufficient ammunition on the front lines is a priority. Getting tanks is a priority. Of the things that we are still not getting, of course, these are long-range missiles, like the ATACMS, for example, as well as fighter jets. And I'm very happy that there is now really like a very active discussion in the U.S. about providing Ukraine with F-16s, because we know that it is possible and we are confident that it will happen. It's just we hope that it will happen sooner rather than later, because every day is, you know, the life of people. Every day is destruction. So we need to stop this.
There's one more conversation that needs to be a part of this episode. We spoke with National Security Council Strategic Communications Coordinator John Kirby about this war and where it stands and where it's going.
Ultimately, victory has got to be up to President Zelensky. He's the commander in chief. He gets to determine what and how success is measured. What we are trying to do is make sure that we are giving him all the tools, the weapons, the systems, the training that he needs to be successful on the battlefield, so that if and when he is ready to sit down and negotiate with Mr. Putin, he can do so from a position of strength. That's what we're focused on.
So what is it at this time that you believe the U.S. believes Ukraine needs most from the U.S.?
Right now, we're focused on what we call the four A's. As you look ahead towards the spring and the potential for fighting in open terrain, combined arms warfare, and we're training battalions of Ukrainian soldiers on that right now outside the country, but they need the four A's. They need artillery. They need air defense. They need armored capabilities, and they need ammunition. And that's, if you look at the most recent set of provisions that we have sent forward and informed Congress on and approved, you'll see that all those four things are represented in there.
So the president said it's not time for modern F-16s to be provided to Ukraine. Why not?
Right now, as I said, we're focused on making sure that we're meeting their needs in the weeks and months ahead. And F-16s, fighter aircraft, at least from the United States, you know, that's a topic for another time. That's not a topic for right now. Right now, we believe what they really need are those four A's that we're talking about. And the Ukrainians we're talking to them in real time. We understand their asks. The idea of F-16s is not a new one, but we want to make sure that what we're providing them is going to be most useful for the fight that they're in and the fight that they're likely to be here again in the weeks and months ahead.
So this so-called spring offensive we keep hearing about, according to many, has already begun. And you have a significant military background, a retired admiral, and you have a good understanding of what that kind of thing means. So what is the Biden team's view of, you know, this spring offensive? Has it begun, or when will it begin, or what do you know?
And I don't think we've come to some sort of consensus that it has, quote unquote, begun. I mean, they never stopped fighting over the course of the winter. And by the way, it's still winter, but they're still fighting. And the fighting is pretty vicious around places like Bakhmut and the Donbas. A little less so as you arc down towards the south and the southwest. But they never stopped fighting. It's difficult to look at what we are seeing now on the ground as an indication or evidence of some large-scale new spring offensive. We do think that the Russians are planning for more wider and deeper offensive operations when the weather starts to improve and the roads get better.
Russia's lost a lot of people, a lot of equipment, a lot of weapons, but they're still begging and looking for other weapons and perhaps even people from other places to help them in this fight. How does the Biden teams view Russia's status at this point in fighting this war?
You heard the president talk about this when he was in Warsaw. Mr. Putin has already failed. He's already lost in so many ways. He certainly has failed to achieve any of his strategic objectives. He wanted to subsume Ukraine into Russia. He wanted to completely bring down the Zelensky administration. He wanted to capture the capital of Kyiv. He wanted to capture Kharkiv, which is a major industrial city. He wanted to take Odessa by taking Kherson, and he wanted to, continue to make strikes deep inside Ukraine. While he continues to be able to conduct airstrikes deep into Ukraine, which he continues now to target civilian infrastructure, he's achieved none of those larger goals. Ukraine is still free. It is still, led by the Zelensky administration, a democratically elected president. Kyiv is still their capital. Now, that doesn't mean that every inch of Ukraine has been restored to her. It hasn't. I mean, there are still areas where Russian troops continue to occupy and continue to fight over, particularly in that Donbas region. But Ukraine's existence as a nation, which is exactly what Mr. Putin wants to take from them, their right to be, their right to their independence, they still preserve that. They still have that. And that's really what's at stake here. You talked about in your first question, victory and what's that look like. What we want for Ukraine is the same thing that the Ukrainians want. A whole, sovereign, peaceful, prosperous nation with borders that are back to the internationally recognized borders. I mean, that's what this is about. Now, how and when they achieve that is going to be up to Ukraine, as I said. But we want to see all their territorial integrity respected.
The war in Ukraine, it's into its second year. And it's not clear how long it will go on. John Kirby, National Security Council Strategic Communications Coordinator. That's it for this episode of Target USA. Coming up in our next episode, China's spy balloon. We've got a lot of questions about that situation. Number one, what were they after? And why was it so difficult to detect in the beginning?
Sometimes these balloons are made out of materials that that don't show up well in radar. Sometimes they just appear as an anomaly.
Nicholas Eftimiades is a retired U.S. intelligence analyst whose specialty was Chinese espionage. That's coming up on the next episode of Target USA. In the meantime, if you have any questions or comments about the program, send me an email. You can reach me at jgreen@wtop.com. The letter J, the color green, one word, at Whiskey Tango Oscar Papa, jgreen@wtop.com. Also, please subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Twitter. We're at TUSA Podcast. That's at Tango Uniform Sierra Alpha Podcast. And if you want more national security news, you can sign up for my newsletter. It's called Inside the Skiff, and you can sign up at wtop.com/email. This is a Target USA moment, episode 40. For Grace Jo's family, 1998 was the last straw.
My grandmother, my younger brothers, they all passed away because of starvation.
For 6-year-old Grace and her younger brother, the food situation was extremely dire.
My younger brother and I were almost 10 days starved straight. We only drank cold water, and there's no meal we can find. The public farms, we cannot find any small potatoes from the farm because other people, they already found them. And the winter time, we can't find wood to burn and keep house warm. We don't have any food, we don't have any money, and there's no way we can make money either.
They had to find a way out of North Korea.
we walked a lot, and we crossed the river by swimming, and we also climbed the mountain.
This has been a Target USA moment, episode 40. Download it, relive it. I'm JJ Green, and this is Target USA,
the National Security Podcast.